Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Bendo, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our special guests are back with us today, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and BA philosopher from the Netherlands. Welcome aboard. And Sandy Fries, certified professional life coach of Indiana. They are back once again, and they're bringing their expertise into the psychological effects of the incarcerated men and women throughout the prison system around the world, solitary confinement, restricted blocks, health care, and or lack of health care in the prisons, forensic clinics, and much more. So let's welcome once again Marion Jacobs and Sandy Fries. Marion, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
What is the weather like over in the Netherlands?
It's a little bit cold, but it's January, so it's supposed to be cold. But the sky is blue at the moment, so...
We can't complain about that.
No, exactly. And there's the days are getting longer. The light is getting... it's longer lights during the day, so that's nice.
Yeah, it's almost similar to what they're saying the weather's going to be like here.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Sandy... How are you this morning?
Yes, just doing great. I'm glad we've got a brand new morning to start out a brand new day, and hope everybody does something during this day that makes them sleep well tonight.
So it's nice out in Indiana too then?
Oh, it is. It's very sunny here. I mean, it's cold. I think it's 28 degrees right now, but, you know, as Miriam said, it is, you know, it is January, so...
Okay, girls, we're going to start off with some of the. So I had a couple of questions myself, and I wanted to know your thoughts on it with these incarcerated individuals who have been, because of the coronavirus, have been kept in their cells for so long. What do you feel is the long term effects if this continues? Start with Mary. Okay, Sandy, we'll start with you.
it's unfortunate, but I one of the incarcerated people that I am advocating for at this moment is expecting to be moved any day now to a different facility, and that's troublesome to me because he doesn't know what he's going into. He doesn't know the situation there. He doesn't know how affected that facility has been by this virus. And, you know, it's just continues to grow and get worse. And, you know, the fear of so many guards that have already succumbed to the virus, and you know, the prisoners also. So, yeah, it's a very, very frightening thing. I don't see it getting better anytime soon, although I hope it does.
I'm glad you brought that up because it's not only them being moved around, but it's also the fact that, and I'm really concerned about with these things myself, they're forcing these prisoners to double cell. And to me, in this time, if a person is single cell, if there were extra cells, they should be filling them up with separating these prisoners and giving them each their single cell, as many until they use up all these single cells. But I find a real problem with keeping those cells empty at a time when this virus is so bad. They're either transferring them out or they're forcing them to double cell. And I don't see any reason why these cells should be empty.
No, I don't either. And, you know, the thing is, when they move these prisoners from one facility to another, they have shackles shackling their legs together. So they are in very, very close proximity with one another and have to work together just to simply make it on to the bus, down to a seat, and off the bus again. So, you know, they're doing nothing as far as social distancing in a situation like that.
It's awful. What are your thoughts on that, Marion?
Well, I think that the virus shows that the system, the failing of the system, because there are no solutions, I think. to approach to protect the prisoners from the virus. There is no approach. There is no solution for it. And it's strange that they transfer prisoners in the middle of a pandemic. At the same time, what you see is that large groups of people protest against social distancing or against all these rules. And at the same time, there are the complaints about the virus. What do we want? You know, it's a contradiction. It makes no sense. And there is no answer. How are you going to protect hundreds of people in one building, in one property, from that virus?
I find it very odd when I think about it, and I'm sure you heard about it on the news. One of the politicians in Washington ended up with the coronavirus. I believe there were three of them, but one of them spoke yesterday, and they ended up in a room with all these their peers who refused to wear masks. And those that did wear the mask, they were subjected to being in the same area. And I think they said there were three of them, but one of them spoke, and I'm trying to remember her name, but it was Cheney, I'm not sure, but she was quite upset because if they had been wearing their mask, she would not have ended up with the virus. We're seeing this in the Capitol. We're seeing this in the prison, and these are people in government that they're doing all this talking about this virus and trying to get rid of it, and yet they're the ones that are not following their own policies, their own regulations,
and innocent people
are getting affected by it.
Yeah, well, what I see is that people respond to the virus on a very emotional way. They are afraid that their freedom is taken away, etc., etc. But a virus is not emotional. That virus doesn't listen to emotions. That's the madness, you know. No, there are too less people who think with common sense. So it's like with the riots, you see all these people all together without masks. How are you ever getting rid of the virus then? And, you know, we have these vaccines, but we have to wait how that will go, because there are also mutations of the virus. So for as long as people are responding on an emotional way to something that you have to approach on a rational way, you keep having these problems.
Absolutely. We've got to figure out a way. You know, it is to me unfathomable how some of these elderly people that are incarcerated, who have been in there for so many years, are not simply being released so that they have an opportunity to protect their bodies instead of continually facing every minute of every day the threat of potentially getting this horrible virus.
You know,
well,
I was just going to say, Mariam, can you speak on that? Because I was going to mention something you said before. And that
I think what Sandy just said, prisoners are not important for the public. For the citizens, they simply, you know, they are not visible. They are locked up behind the walls. So who cares about where these people, if these people get sick or not? I mean, if they don't care that these people are beaten up by guards, etc., and put in solitary confinement for years, why would they care about prisoners getting sick or not from the virus? What's the difference?
Yeah, there is no difference, and that's a good
point. The thing is, yesterday I saw a comment on Facebook from somebody who's advocating for, and I think it's a very important thing to explain. She was advocating for body cams on guards in women's prisons, because now that Lowell women prison, it's clear that there are so many women women abused and raped. She wants body cams. And I said to her, that's only part of the solution. If you want to, if you want to get rid of that problem, then you have to start with changing the mindset. You know, if you put a body cam on a guard, it doesn't change the mindset. It only puts more discipline in the system. You should have to change the mindset. How are you going to change the mindset? By giving other education. What's the main thing of that education that guards should get? That's that they learn that prisoners are human beings like all of us. When you go a step further, then you have to make a change into the system, and then you have to listen to Eighth Amendment that prisoners should get their human rights back, like the voting rights, because then that shows that prisoners are human beings like we are. Then we get an equal contact between staff and prisoners. And when you go a step further again, then you come to 13th Amendment, and then the excluding part that should be abolished. So what you see is that we try to find solutions on problems on the outside, but the solutions of these problems that we see are lying in the inside. If you put body cams on guards, it doesn't change their way of thinking and approaching prisoners. So the problem is not solved. The problem even gets worse because the public, the citizens think, there is a problem, there is a solution, problem is solved. But the problem is not solved. And that has, you know, when you look at this wire, you can apply it to every problem, also the virus. I think the biggest problem in the system is dehumanization. If you dehumanize people, then you can cross lines. Also with approaching the people when you look at the virus. The public don't care about whether prisoners get sick of the virus or not. Why would they? Prisoners are not human beings, so why would they care about it? It sounds very harsh, but it is this way, and it's the solutions lay in politics.
Exactly. You mentioned previously that the country is about vengeance and retaliation, and I know that has a lot to do with it. I think too, a lot of these lawmakers are so much more worried about the constituents who are opposed to releasing prisoners. And so rather than to come up with solutions to start releasing these elderly, like you mentioned, 75, I mean, who can do anything at the age of 75 or 70 with the arthritis and with all the medical? Walking on those prison floors with those prison shoes, I'm sure, is not helping. But they're more worried about their constituents who are opposed to releasing prisoners rather than listening to the constituents, the people that are for releasing the elderly and releasing those who are nonviolent and releasing those who have served many years, 25 or 30 years. These are the things that they should be looking at, but they're more worried about their own
vote. Well, I think when, you know, Leona, when what you say, you look at prisoners as human beings, and that's why you say this.
Exactly.
But politics has consciously chosen for a disciplinary system to punish people. It's a choice that has been made. And what you say does not belong to that system. In that system, the goal of the system is not rehabilitation. It's transforming criminal people into obedient and useful bodies, because if a criminal mind is changed into an obedient mind, then he will not commit a crime anymore. You have to think from the system. That's how this, that's the goal of the system. That has nothing to do with letting people out because they are old or letting protecting people from the virus. That those thoughts do not belong to the disciplinary system. And that's the problem. We try to solve the problems that we see. But it doesn't work if the mindset does not work. It doesn't work if laws doesn't work. You know, you cannot cannot solve the problem if you do not solve the law, if you do not change Amendment 13th and abolish the exception, because that's very devastating. Because the exception already says that prisoners are not human. So you if you look through the political eyes, not the eyes of an advocating person, but from politics, then it makes sense that you don't care about prisoners getting sick. Why can prisoners have they not access to health care? And why would they, if they not have access to health care, then they also then it also doesn't matter whether people get sick of the coronavirus or not. You have to look through political eyes. And politics in the United States is entangled with economy. But that is not what they say. They have a hidden agenda. That's not what they say, because in the law it's written that it's that people get incarceration out of revenge, punishment taking out of the society, and rehabilitation. That's a very smart game. So they say no, rehabilitation is in the law, but you don't see it back in the system, and it's impossible to do rehabilitation in this disciplinary system. It's not possible. It's simply not possible.
I would like to know what they would do when the fires broke out in California, and a lot of these tornadoes, I mean hurricanes, they use prisoners. And I wonder how many people would have been, who would have died in those fires had it not been for the prisoners that they released to help with those crises. And the same thing with the you know, whenever there's a national crisis or something major happens, a lot of times they bring the prisoners out to help with solve the problem. And if the prisoners did not help, how many lives would be lost? So if the prisoners could save lives, then their lives should be looked at a little bit more valuable, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't think that people go that far in their thinking.
It's too bad.
That's the whole problem. You know, what you see, like in the Netherlands, we don't have body cams on guards, and we don't want it because it creates distrust in the contact between guards and prisoners. In your country, you need body cams because of all the abuse.
Exactly.
So
that's right.
The body cams are not how do you say that? It's not solving the problem. It shows what the problem is. You have to turn around the coin if you want to change the system. It tells something about a systemic problem. All these problems are systemic. And seeing body cams as a solution is a danger, because then the public thinks, okay, problem is solved because they have body cams. No,
right.
No, but body cams tells us that there is a very deep-rooted problem of abuse. And then you have this wire of lack of education, dehumanization, all the way back to politics and the laws. And that's what to have, that has to come to the surface.
You know, I've been studying, you know, I told both of you that I'm working on a book right now, a sister book with you, Miriam, and I've been studying a lot of the laws and the penal codes and things, and the United States Penal Code, Title 18, Statute 683, This is Crimes and Criminal Procedure. I'm not going to read all of this. I'm going to read just a very brief part of it. And I think this is going to help. It's probably not going to help, but it's very clearly states what our judicial system is not doing. And if you don't mind, I'll just read a very little bit of this. It says, if two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and if death results from acts committed in violation of this section, or if such acts include kidnapping or an attempt to kidnap, aggravated sexual abuse, or the attempt to commit aggravated sexual abuse, or an attempt to kill, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned for any term of years or for life or both, or may be sentenced to death. That is very clear, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Very clear. And yet, it's not being acknowledged and it's not being dealt with. And I think you're right, Miriam, when you mentioned body cams, that's part of the solution. But until we restructure why in the world we have to have them in the first place.
Exactly. So
it's not solving the issue.
No, it's telling that there is, you know, we have to think about, okay, we need body cams. So what is wrong in the system that we need body cams? That should be the question, not whether we have to. And that's the question that's asked too less, or maybe it's not asked at all. The system is, you know, in the Netherlands, people are not allowed to have body cams because it disturbs the contact between a prisoner and a guard, because it shows distrust. And when there is distrust, people get suspicious. People cannot communicate openly toward each other anymore.
Right, I agree completely with that. But until the United States begins to understand that, they are still necessary, in my opinion, because until we can get that mindset going, that we are dealing with United States citizens here.
Mm-hmm.
Until that mentality starts to take place, and it is still a very necessary prohibitor to prison abuse.
Yeah,
it's heartbreaking,
it,
but it, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I understand, because you can. The system works this way right now, and there has to be also a solution for the situation in the now. I understand that, and I hope that people, you know, besides that it's needed now, that people dare to ask that question, because
you know what I believe myself as a social worker anyway. I believe that when any man or woman applies for a job in law enforcement, I believe that they should be extensively evaluated. I know lie detector tests are not submittable in courts, but even to put them under hypnosis or have a lie detector test to see where they're coming from in their beliefs and their you know, their feelings towards other cultures, their feelings towards the younger people versus the older, I think that they should be extensively evaluated, because there's a lot of people, I believe, on the police force as young people growing up that may have been bullied by the kids in school. They may have been coming from a home that was very racist. It could be coming from any situation at all. But sometimes they bring that with them when they get older and they go into these positions. And I think that's why a lot of these young police officers or young guards, once they get in with their older peers or their younger peers, they want to show off. They want to show their strength because now they're wearing a uniform. People are afraid of that uniform. You know, they have titles above these people that they're arresting. Some of these, and I'll say, I have, as I said, I have a relative that's a police officer. And years ago, one of my sisters, her son had gotten stopped, I guess, for drugs or something. And she said that they had him handcuffed, his hands behind his back, and they kept pushing him to the ground face first. She was upset with the nephew because he never said anything. He never intercepted what was going on. But as I told her, even if he did, they probably would have turned on him. And you know, these things happen. But I think myself that a lot of times, and that's why I know there's actually abuse within the penal system and also in law enforcement. People don't realize it, but if they have relatives in law enforcement or in the prisons, they know themselves. They may not say anything, but they know that abuse is going on, and they should speak up if their loved ones are not going to. But I think they need to be evaluated before going into getting any position at all. They need to be evaluated. They need to be looked back, way back to when they were younger, to find out what kind of history they have. Because I know there's some police officers that have had a history of abuse with people that they have stopped, and those police officers were still on the force. So I think if there's a history of, and they should monitor them and oversee everything that they do, they should have regular, extensive evaluations every year.
I agree. You know, in most prominent positions, you go through hoops and jumps to get those positions. And yet a high school diploma and a little bit of training, and those who are training these people really need to toe the line, because if they're not training them properly, they themselves need to be retrained. I do want to just put one thing in there. I want to say one thing, and that is this. I absolutely do not believe that all guards are corrupt or all officers are corrupt. And I just, you know, I want to say that because I know there are many good people in both of these positions. And unfortunately, the training that goes on for these guards and for these police officers, it would be very interesting just to be a fly on the wall and sit and watch these training sessions go on and how they're trained, how they're spoken to. You know, if they are constantly saying, you know, you're the one in control, you're the one in control, you take care of the situation, you stop the situation. You know, there needs to be a whole other aspect of training, and that is the emotional training. They need to empathize. They need to learn to empathize with these incarcerated people.
I trained for 3 weeks with the Department of Corrections, and those 3 weeks were enough to let me know I didn't want to stay with them, because what they talk to you like when they're training, they talk to you like the prisoners are so violent that you can't talk with them, you can't do this, you can't do that. They make it seem like these people that they're talking about are animals. And that's why it's anybody that joins these positions, they better have enough courage to speak out when they see these things happening or hear these things happening. But because of the unions being so powerful, they're afraid, as you say, there's good police officers and there's good correction officers. But if they can't speak up, like someone said before, if they're not going to speak up, they're part of the problem.
Yeah, and I think they have to become, they have to learn to become aware of that great power a uniform has, you know, and they are also in the same position as you know, if you go to a doctor or a psychologist, they all have positions of power, and you have to be aware of that because it is dangerous otherwise, and they should go through a process of self-knowledge. When I did my education to become a psychosocial therapist, I also had to go through a therapeutic process by myself to learn to know myself, my own pitfalls, my own vulnerabilities. And that's all what's not happening in these trainings. That's only military training. And there you see that these guards are already trained in dehumanization. That's part of the program. That's part of the whole thing. And that's why they can cross lines. That's what that's also the similarity, what you see, what you saw in the Second World War in the concentration camps. They could do with the Jews what they wanted to do because they were not human. A guard who rapes a woman in a prison will never rape a woman on the streets because it feels for him that when he does it on the streets, he would be a sex offender. But when he does it in prison, it's different because that woman is not human. And that's the danger. That's so dangerous because let's admit it is insane that you have to speak about these beatings, about rapes, about abuse, that they know where the corners without cameras are, where they can do the illegal stuff. It is insane that you have to talk about it.
It is, and it is heartbreaking that those guards who have stood up against other guards have to go into hiding for fear of their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me of that. What was his name? DJ Vodka?
Yeah.
He was an example from California, a CO that turned and exposed. I mean, I give that man so much credit. He came forward and spoke out.
He is amazing.
Yes.
I would like to ask politicians, real high point, I don't speak them, that's unfortunately, but I would like to ask them, what do you want to do with prisoners? What's your goal? I would like to ask that, but I don't think I will get an honest answer. But I would like to ask that because it's really madness on the whole. It's really madness.
There are some, though. There's one there was some in Massachusetts. They wanted to, and I know there's some in other states, too. They want to abolish life and life without parole sentencing, you know, as other countries don't have it. So they wanted to abolish it. And I heard that one of them had a death threat, and all of a sudden that disappeared off the table. So there are some that want to see this happen. They want to see change, but they don't want to deal with the repercussions, you know. For Miriam, I know that in the Netherlands, in Norway, in Germany, in all these other countries, I know that when they decided to do away with some of these things or not to have them, they probably went through the same thing, but yet they did it. And so if they can do it in other countries, regardless of a death threat, you know, look at all the death threats that have been made in this nation in the last couple of weeks and things that have happened, but yet they're moving forward. And this is what has to happen in politics. When they talk about prison reform and they talk about doing away with some of these things, they can't back away because of one or two little death threats. I mean, people can call and say anything to scare you into not doing what they don't want you to do. But as our nation's leader, they have the obligation to move forward and to stop all this madness in these prisons and to stop
doing. Yeah, and I think it also has to do with emotions versus being down to earth. You know, politicians have to make choices on a rational base, despite the emotions of all the people. We cannot, you know, we cannot keep every single citizen satisfied. There are so many of them, you know. In the Netherlands, there are also people who think that we are crazy because we are too soft. Yeah, well, bad luck for them. We chose this, and we are going to maintain this. We want to keep it human. We want to have really rehabilitated people back in society.
And what is your recidivism rate like? It's very low, right?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the numbers, but it's much lower than in your country. And I know from Norway, it's only 2% or something.
Exactly. And it can't be done here?
I think it can
unless
be done.
Unless people begin to alter their mindsets, and until people begin to come together as a force and demand that it changes.
I think important is that they are open, transparent, because that's what I miss. I don't see transparency, you know. I see a key figure speaking about rehabilitation, blah, 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 but I don't see it. There is a whole bureaucracy around the system, you know, which is veiled, which is secretly, you know, it's not in the open. When you see, you know, sometimes you have in the news about abuses, and then you read that those abuses have been going on for decades because everything is blurred. If they want to make money out of the prison, then let them say it out loud. Okay, we have the system because we earn money with it. Be transparent in that.
Exactly.
You know, what's happening now is they say one thing and they do other things. It's like the Southern strategy, you know. It comes back, that mechanism comes back everywhere. It's like what Trump did when after the riot, he said, people, you have to go home. But then in the same message, he said, oh, I love you all and I understand it and all the other people are bad people. Two messages in one message, blurred, veiled, we cannot grasp it.
No.
Be clear, be transparent. If politicians say, want to make money out of the system, okay, but say so. But don't talk about rehabilitation if you are not going to do that. And that's what I hate about it. I really hate that secrecy, that, you know, lying about things and make on the outside making it so beautiful as if everybody's working so hard and they want to have the best. But yeah, it's nonsense. Sorry, it's nonsense.
You
know what to do.
It is.
Yeah, be down to earth. Stop being so emotional. But I see that back in everything, even with the virus. I never forget all these protesters with all these guns. Oh, I want to have the freedom to wear to carry my gun, and I don't want to be restricted in the rules for the virus. Yeah, okay, well, then you don't be restricted in the rules, but then you have to accept that you get sick and that you die because a virus is not emotional. A virus does what it has to do to multiply and to survive. And that's what is insane, you know, that all the emotional thinking and that's very difficult. Everything,
you know,
even the riots at the Capitol, it's all one big emotion.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say.
And that the emotions are, look, if you look at emotions are wonderful. They make a human, you know, it's the feeling, it's being touched by certain music or whatever. Emotions. But if you stay stuck in emotions, then they become dangerous. Wars are fought because of emotions. Islamic suicide bombers, they do that based on religious emotions. Emotions are beautiful, but the other side of it is danger. And that's also what you see in the system. Lots of people say, people who commit a crime have to be locked up, have to be punished very harsh, blah, blah, blah. But it's all emotions. It's not being down to earth. It's not rational thinking. That's lost.
No, and the whole thing, the whole system, you know, two out of three people that get released from jails or prisons here in the United States, and this is just a study I read from 2020, two out of three returned back to incarceration within 3 years of being released. And the problem is these people have not learned how to have pro-social conversations. They have not learned that they are worthy of being on the outside. They go out, they're released with little to nothing. They have not been encouraged during the time they were incarcerated to do better and to live a better life, and that they are human beings. And once they get out, they have all this weight on their shoulders, including, this label that they have, which makes it almost impossible for them to get jobs that are going to pay enough to support themselves. And so it's a vicious cycle. They're not taught, they're not encouraged, they're not given opportunities to rise above the mistakes they made before, because they're not that mistake. They may have made a bad choice. They are not that bad choice. They're a human being that made a bad choice. So they need to understand that they are still a good quality individual who made a mistake, and the justice system has got to offer these people some kind of therapy that and give them an opportunity to connect with positive, healthy peers that are going to help to guide them in the right direction.
This is where I think the politicians should come in. Law enforcement, lawmakers, they need to discuss how they can have a transitional period when they're getting ready to release prisoners from prison to a transitional facility where they can actually have occupational therapists there to help them to actually start helping them to find work. Someone to help with resumes, someone to help with transitional housing or permanent housing. But you know what they do? They don't have anything like that. They just release them to the public, to the community. But also, I was going to say with these politicians, when we vote people in office, we're voting them in to be leaders. And that's the one thing many of them are not. They're not leaders because when they can become fearful of prison reform issues that they want to work on, that's pretty sad. Now, as bad as everyone thinks of Trump, and Trump it's scary. But the reasons I think he has his followers is because he has determination. This man is determined to keep his position. He's determined he's not going to go to jail when he gets out. He's so determined that these people are seeing his determination, his leadership. And I think that's what we need in a political arena with our leaders. Mm-hmm. If they're going to be leaders, they need to have that determination. No matter what, if they feel like prison reform is necessary, they need to keep that determination and move forward, do what they started. I was watching PBS or one of those stations the other day when someone from one of those other countries was saying, what business does the United States have telling us what to do when they can't even get it together in their country? When somebody says that from another country, there's a lot of things going on in this country that need to be addressed. And leadership in our government with our lawmakers is the first start.
Yes, leaders have to be very determined to do prison reform or abolish the whole system and develop a new one. But even, you know, I saw a film about Obama. He was visiting a prison and he spoke to prisoners, but he could change it too. And I think it was while he was president, I'm not sure. So then I think, what is it that change hasn't succeeded until now? I don't know. Even Obama could not succeed. He could do it while he has been in the system. He spoke to the people. He spoke to prisoners. He knows what's going on. I don't know.
Speaking of President Obama, as much as he was respected, and I respected him as a president, especially after seeing what came after. But one of the things I will say about President Obama and others who are in political positions, President Obama was trying to help those, as he said, because I received the letter from him when I had written to him. And one of the things he said is he was trying to help those that had the same issue that he had. So when he was in college, I guess he experimented with some, I don't know what kind, it was just weed or marijuana or what, but he's trying to help those who had the same issue. Well, I'm sorry, but when I hear something like that, it really upsets me because just like marijuana in Massachusetts, and I don't know if it's around the country, has been legalized. So what happens to all these people in prison for the use of marijuana and things that happen as a result of the marijuana? They wait until it happens to them or somebody in their loved ones or their friends, and all of a sudden it's okay to approve it, you know, to make it legal. And I don't respect any lawmaker or any politician or anyone that makes these based on their own experience rather than basing it on compassion and understanding for these people that are actually incarcerated because of these things.
Well, when you look at the system, I would like to have your opinion from the both of you. When you look at the system, what of the system do you see reflected in the society? What do you see in society?
The same
how
thing
is it? How is it a mirror?
These people in prison are in prison because of what they see and what they go through in society. You know, you can either overcome society, or you can be a victim of it. And in this case, the prisons are full because society doesn't understand. No one's born bad, so something happens along the way. Children are violated. Children are abused. Children are placed in foster care rather than having the social workers actually work with the family. If they don't have transportation, take them to counseling. Don't just expect them to get there on their own. You know, these are the things that happen. These adolescents, these people that are taught to hate, taught racism, well, they don't realize when our military men go into to work to advocate for their own country, they're not just white. They're all colors. They're black, brown, beige, white, red, all colors. God, when he created the world, he created a colorful world. Everything in this world is so beautiful because it's so a variety of all different colors. They're taught the hatred in this country. And then we have these political leaders that base their decisions, their policies on experiences that they have or their friends have, their peers. We have law enforcement that get away with the same thing that people are being incarcerated. Lawmakers that should be in prison, they get a slap on the hand. Look at that Lori Loughlin or whatever her name was. She served 2 months in prison. They made a big issue of it. Mm. Oh, this woman went to prison. This woman should have gotten more because there's people in prison that did less than her. But these are the things that I see happening. And it's really sad because there's so much inconsistency. And every state in the United States should be operating in the same manner, because the problems are the same in every state. But yet every state operates different. Every prison across the country operates differently. This country is so inconsistent, so dysfunctional, and it needs to be changed. But we have to have real leadership to make those changes in America.
I agree. We have to have good leadership. I want to mention, too, about mirroring between those who are incarcerated and those who are free in society, quote, free. You know, many of these prisoners have just lost hope. You know, they receive little to zero support. They face abuse. They face degradation. They're dehumanized. And, you know, and yet when I look at so many people that are living in society and are free, they're going through the same things. They've lost hope. They're receiving little to no support. They face abuse and degradation. I mean, it is mirrored. It really mm-hmm. is. Those who are incarcerated and those living in society are both facing very similar things. They're turning around saying, help us, help us. We're turning around saying, help us, help us. And who's responsible for helping us? And how are they going to do it? And we have to carry a great responsibility for helping ourselves, as do these prisoners. But see, the only difference is we're in a better state to do that than they are.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And, you know, the advocates as well, I have to say this. Since the penal system isn't doing it, and since there's nothing for them to look forward to when they get ready to come out, the way I look at it is advocates can help, because all we have to do is go on the internet. It's so easy. go on the internet and type in transitional assistance or transitional housing for ex-offenders in whatever state it might be, in Massachusetts, or supportive aftercare resources for ex-offenders in Indiana, pro bono lawyers in Florida, pro bono lawyers in Ohio, free automobiles. You know, there's so much, everything that you can possibly think of. And it's just like you're writing on a piece of paper. Employment for ex-offenders in Florida, employment for ex-offenders in Washington, wherever it may be. That's all they have to do. And then when they get those resources, share them on Facebook with people, all these different groups where people have loved ones coming out or people have loved ones in prison. But it's so easy. As a researcher, there's nothing that whenever I research, I put free before it, or I put pro bono before it. And I put the state I'm looking for, and I put if they're ex-offenders or if they're still incarcerated. You know, civil rights advocacy groups or organizations for prisoners having their rights violated. These are so easy to do. So if the prison officials or the penal system's not going to do it, if the politicians are not going to come up with something like that, then we as advocates have that obligation to do the very same thing that we do for anyone else on the outside. And that is so easy to do. You know, there's a thing, it was called HIRE, H-I-R-E, all in capital letters, a period after each letter. HIRE was, I believe it was with the government, but they helped with jobs, bonds, bail, all these things. And they had them in every state. I haven't seen it. I haven't been looking for it now, but I'm sure if people type it in, they'll find it.
You know, if we can compile a database of the things you were just saying, Leona, such as in every single state, and sometimes many different areas of every single state, compile who actually does hire ex-incarcerated people, who can offer to get them to the probation office. I'm talking as far as Uber or something like that. Someone, you know, if we can compile this database, that's a lot of proof right there that can go to every governor within the United States saying, all of these people are helping. What are you doing?
Yeah, we should all reinforce each other.
Yes.
Because there are so many groups now who are all functioning on their own, isolated. You should become one force, in fact. And then,
and then
you have the power to stand up.
You know, if you type in free transportation for prisoners to go to rehabilitation programs, they come up with all kinds of things, the ride home program, inmate reentry programs, from prison to treatment. These are just typed in free transportation for prisoners to go to rehabilitation programs. And all these things just pop up, on and on and on and on. It's that simple. People don't realize how easy it is. I started this, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are doing it, but for the whole month of January, to make 3 calls each day, every day, for the whole month of January, to the media, to the politicians, to the governor's office, to the attorney general's office, and talk about the issues at hand with their loved ones or the issues at hand with prison reform, anything. But just keep the media busy for the month of January so that they will be bringing it out. They'll finally start talking about the issues in the prisons. But how easy is that? Picking up a phone and making 3 calls a day, you know, share the telephone numbers that you get, share it with other people. The resources are the same, like you and Marion was saying, Sandy, compile a resource directory. That's what I do. I send it to my volunteers. I had somebody that was putting the resource book together, and they ended up leaving. But I was getting the resources, sending them the links to the resources, and letting them put it in the book so people will have this. They need it. but they don't really need to have anybody send it to them. All they need to do is type it in, whatever they're looking for. Type it into that internet browser. They don't have to do HTTP. They don't have to do www. Just put it down like what they're looking in, whatever state they're looking for it in. There are resources galore out there. Happen.
That is pivotal. I think that needs to be addressed, and it not only addressed, but it needs to be done. So I personally am going to start doing some research today and see what kind of information I can find. This one thing I do want to say is a lot of people that have organizations, maybe I won't say a lot, but some they desire to claim ownership of those organizations and don't really want to work with other people. That's another problem we have.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Why is that? Why is that?
I don't know. I really don't know, but because it makes no sense to me personally. But I have run across that, you know.
Okay.
It's like in Massachusetts. I mean, they don't, in other states too, I'm sure, they don't realize there are organizations in other states that will send somebody. There was, I have to find the name of it. It's out of Washington, but they actually came to, a lawyer came from Washington to a prison in Massachusetts to meet with the prisoner. And what they do is they'll meet with them to determine if their organization will be able to help them legally. But there's resources out in other states that can help people in Massachusetts or any other state. But these organizations that, like you were just saying, that have their own organization, they don't want to work with other organizations. That's the worst thing they can do. I've been networking for the last 20 years, networking with other groups and organizations. I find I have more success working with advocacy groups, individuals, and organizations in other states than I do my own.
Yeah, we in the Netherlands,
yes.
we have one, I don't know the English word, but we have one organization, and that has an overview of every organization, every individual, everyone that works in the benefit for prisoners. So that organization has the whole overview of everything that's involved for the same purpose, you know, for the prisoner. And that works perfect because I am also a member of that. And there's also an exchange of, you know, if I need some certain information and I can ask it, and that organization knows exactly, okay, you need that part, or you need that person, or, you know, they bring people together, and that would be perfect, you know. And then every organization can work on its own, but it's the overview that helps, you know, that you know where you have to be when you need certain information to get yourself further in what you are doing for incarcerated people.
Yeah. I think the best success, and we can do just as much as the politicians if we all network. And just because someone's from another country or another state doesn't mean it's not going to work. It's going to work even better. People from, say somebody from Massachusetts is now living in Indiana, or somebody from California is now living in Massachusetts. They have these resources, these advocates. They're all over the place, but they also have families in these different states too. Not everybody is confined to one state. Not all their loved ones are confined to one state. So when we think about resources, when we think about networking, we're expanding knowledge. We're expanding resources.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to think of. These organizations, another thing, and these organizations that advertise and they can't come through need to be noted. Because I've had legal services say that they cannot take cases because they don't have enough resources. If you don't have enough resources, then put it on your website, temporarily unable to accept any new cases. But don't say you can't help this one because you don't have the resources. and the next one that comes along, all of a sudden you're going to be able to help. It,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
No. That's true. There is a lot of work that has to be done.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
And if politicians have to, we as advocates have to come together.
Yeah,
and
what I think,
what I think
is very useful is to contact that director of the prison in North Dakota. She is really trying. I have mentioned her in a former radio show here.
Mm-hmm.
She's making really changing in rehabilitation inside the system, and it's in North Dakota. She's very interesting to get information from.
What is she? She is the, you mean the commissioner or warden in a prison?
She's the director of a prison. How do you
okay.
say that? The highest position.
In North Dakota.
Yeah, it's in North Dakota. And you can find it when you look at the film Breaking the Circle in YouTube. Breaking the Circle is a film which compares the Norwegian system to the United States system. And the director of the Halden prison in Norway is visiting the United States. And then you see the differences. And in that film, you see that director of the prison in North Dakota. And she's really making changes. Like there is still solitary confinement, but only for the 2 weeks. You know, it has been proven that after 15 days, solitary confinement becomes devastating, harming, damaging the brain. And she says no more than 15 days solitary confinement at the most, like we have in the Netherlands. She changes
fantastic,
and she speaks with guards and explains them about the human approach, because I think that's the key in the whole process and the whole thing. And that's what she's doing. She's having these conversations with guards, explains things to guards, let them have discussions together. That's what she does in the current system. And there are guards who don't believe in it, but they have to get along with it. Like what you said, Leona, about Trump. You know, she makes the decisions, and she says this is the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and this is not the Department of Emotions. She has,
wow.
You know, she does it now in the United States. In this disciplinary system, she's doing it. I really admire this woman. She's doing it. And she went to Norway. She knows that the director of the Halden prison, and she took her lessons, and she's implementing it. Yep, she's doing it.
Wow. Is her name Leanne Birch?
I have to look it up.
The director of the North Dakota Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, Leanna, B-E-R-T-S-C-H. Yeah.
Can be. Do you see a link to the film Breaking the Circle?
I did see it. Let me.
Yeah, then she is it. She's very interesting, I think, for you to write an email to contact.
She also has the Thinking Outside the Box. It's the same.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's got. Yeah, I think it is the same person. But Break the Cycle.
Break the Cycle. Yeah, sorry, the cycle, yes.
And then Deanna.
Okay.
Bali,
and I think she's very valuable for you because she does make the changes in your system, in the United States system. So that's close to home. That's in the same country and in the same circumstances. And she's doing it. So it can be done.
Wow.
But what you said, Leona, what you see in her is that she is determined. What you said about politicians, you know, people have to be determined to make a change despite what everybody says. Well, she's doing it. And she doesn't care. There are guards who say, this woman is crazy, but they still have their jobs and they have to change. And you have to press it through, you know. And that's what she does.
You know, they'll get more respect.
Amazing.
If they're determined, you know, to make the changes,
yeah.
Nothing's going to stop them.
Exactly. Otherwise, you keep on talking. It's nice to talk about it, but sometimes you have to stop talking and start doing.
Exactly.
Quit all the bullshit and do it. Do what's right, because everybody knows intuitively that this is what's going on. It's very wrong. Everybody knows that. You can feel that. You don't need to know anything about laws or incarceration to know that this is very wrong. Everybody knows it.
Exactly. I hate when you hear a lot of talking and nothing's getting done. It's frustrating. Because anybody, every single day, when I watch the news, every single day it's pretty much the same. And, you get tired of it. Because right now, okay, we already know what happened at the Capitol. We already know what's happening in the prisons. We want to know what's being done about it.
Yeah, what's being done on a structural way. I saw news about this woman who is on death row. She would be put to death in these weeks. What's her name? She committed a horror. Yeah, and
I think she was put to death today, wasn't it? Something.
Well, I read that it's not going, that it stopped, that she's not going to put to death now. Is that right?
Is that the one that took the baby?
She
was executed, I believe, this morning.
Yeah, and then I read that articles about her background, how she has been abused, and how she has been devastated by her mother, by all the boyfriends of her mother, other men. So she is this example of the human being behind the crime that has been damaged and has to be seen. But she's only an example. I hope that with this example, people are going to change it on a structural way.
Yeah.
That's the big question. How are they going to do it? Now what I see in the news is examples, cases. But this is an only example of many, many people. I saw that every single human being who is on death row has suffered abuse in childhood. 100% has suffered from that. So what is going to change now? What are they going to do about it now? That's what I'm curious about. And I'm afraid
I can't understand is why did they close down all these mental institutions when we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses? Why did they close these institutes down just to put them in prison where they don't get the treatment? It's a money-making thing. And so all these people out in the streets that are messing up, I mean, addictions, we know a lot of these addictions come from either taking prescriptions for pain, or they become drugs because they're trying to cover up pain, whatever the case may be. So why do they close down these institutions? I'd like to know that myself, because it doesn't make sense that they would close down mental institutions and put these people who are mentally ill in prison.
Yeah, and if there are so many people addicted to drugs and medications, why does society not ask why these people want to run away from reality in society? When I want to have drugs and I'm running away from something I cannot deal with, otherwise I need to get stoned, And if there are so many people who want to have this addiction. Why is there not a question about what's wrong in society that all these people need an addiction? And that's what they do with restorative justice. If you look at restorative justice, and that's also what you see in Norway and what you see more in the Netherlands, is that when people get incarcerated, then there are three parties that are responsible for the crime. That's the first place. It's, of course, the offender. But the victim also has to ask himself, how can I heal myself? He also has to go through a process. He has the responsibility for himself to heal himself. But as a society, you also have to wonder, why are these crimes committed? What's wrong in our society that this happens? And that's what the United States society does not want to do. They don't want to take the responsibility. I think there is a lot wrong with responsibility, because I also see that reflected in the system. Prisoners do not get learned how to become responsible for their own acts. They have to learn that if you, at the moment that you commit a crime, you were not responsible. So something is wrong with taking responsibility in your life. So you have to learn that. That's rehabilitation. The same with the guards. The guards only have to follow rules, protocols, and if they are not doing that, they get disciplined. They go through the same process as a prisoner. So they are not responsible on a personal level. That's why they can abuse prisoners. And then you have society who does not want to take responsibility for the question, what's wrong in our society that these crimes are committed? What's wrong in our society that we have this disciplinary system, which is an evil system? It's a proven evil system. I prove it in my book. There are more people who prove it. So what you see is on all levels, prisoner level, staff level, society level, people don't take responsibility. It's an
anti-circle. You know what they do,
yeah,
which I think is wrong, is, and this is a problem in society, they take sides. Be neutral. If it's not your loved one, if it's not your situation, be neutral. And the media, the so-called righteous, young people, they worry more about what they're wearing and what they look like, but they don't report what they should report when it comes to people like that. There was a young man recently, I'd say about maybe the last couple of months, who killed his parents. It came out that he has mental issues. And the media is reporting, oh, this man killed his... They're going on like this man was a hardcore criminal when the man has autism and some other psychological mental illness. What they didn't say enough of is that this man is sick. This man needs help. Instead, they said, oh, this man killed his parents. They made him already look like a hardcore criminal. So society needs to stop taking sides. They need to let these people, these victims, heal. But how can victims heal when they have continuously have people bringing it up, people that are not even connected in any way?
But I think that what you say, Leon, about taking sides, that's also taking not responsibility. Because if I take a side, I am very safe at that side. I don't need to take my own responsibility because I do not... I don't need to think for myself, think authentic. And what you see in the prison system or before the prison system is that the crime is convicted, the crime is judged, and the human being is forgotten. The prison system is not full of human beings, it's full of crimes. What you say about this man who killed his parents, the crime, it's only the people only see the crime, but they don't see the human being behind that crime.
Exactly.
And that's the whole problem. So for a lot of people, they don't have this feeling that there are human beings behind that wall. There are only crimes behind that wall. And they too choose sides because they don't want to think for themselves, because thinking for yourself means, well, maybe people do not agree with you, and that might be scary. So if I pick a side, then I'm safe. Then you come to fear. You know, I fear my own... I fear to be authentic. I fear to think for myself. I fear people who commit crimes, so we have to lock them up. I fear black people because then I cannot reach my American dream. You know, there's a lot of fear involved. And fear, and then we come back again to emotion, because fear is based on emotions. But if we are not able to think rationally, then we stay in this fear. And that's what you also see in society. That's what also happens at the capital. It's based on fear that they don't want to lose Trump because Trump supports the whites and the Proud Boys, etc. And the Proud Boys, etc. are afraid of the black people because the black people can stand in the way of the American dream. Do you hear me talking in circles? It's all circles that I'm talking in.
Absolutely.
And that's what, you know, that's breaking the cycle, in fact. It's all this circular thinking that makes me tired, too, because we're all getting back on the same issues, same issues, same issues.
Yeah.
And so responsibility is important. Fear is an important thing. Emotions is an important thing. Those are all values, which at every value has two sides. So every corn... coin has to be turned around, and then you can turn around the coin of the system. And if you turn around the coin of the disciplinary system, then you get the system what you see in Norway, because in Norway society takes their own responsibility, and human beings are not afraid to think for themselves.
That's right. You know, I've got a Martin Luther King Jr. quote that I love, and he says, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that."
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Exactly. And what happened to him?
Yes. Yes.
And what happened to Gandhi?
Yeah. And this goes right back. This goes right back, Miriam, to fear.
Exactly.
When we as people see other people trying to do every possible positive thing they can, and being beaten or murdered because they tried so hard to do something positive for every member of society, then, you know, you have that fear. Well, if I keep going, if I open my mouth, you know, this could happen to me. And so, you know, I think there is a lot of strength in numbers. There's strength in numbers.
Yes.
Yeah, because what you see is what happened to Martin Luther King, what happened to Kennedy, what happened to Gandhi, and even Jesus in the Bible. He got the death penalty. Numbers can be very strong, because these numbers killed those people. So these numbers can also turn around the coin. And then you come back to that quote what you just said, Sandy. That you break the cycle of hate by love, the love of numbers.
Yeah.
Because we all, human beings, exist from a dark and a light side. We all carry love and hate, and we need to find the balance in it. That's the yin yang from the Taoism. It's thousands of years old, that symbolism, but that's who we are. And it's it's not about abolishing hate or abolishing the dark side. It's about becoming aware of it and then find the right balance. You know, everything is always about balance. You can see it back in nature, you can see it back in the cosmic, with the planets, and it's finding a balance in diversity, because going against diversity is also going against divine energy or God, or however you want to call it, because everything stems originally from diversity. If you look at our solar system, every planet is different, but they balance around the sun. And what you see in the huge form in there is also what you see energetically in a human psyche, in ourselves. We all carry these cosmic balances in us. And what you see at the capital, what you see in the prison system, what you see with so many people losing jobs because of the virus and having no health cure anymore, that's all disbalance in systems. It's all the same, and you can all change it by turning around the coin, I think. And
absolutely, and we have to understand that just because we were raised a certain way or have come to believe things, other people have encouraged us or, you know, to believe, that we don't have to hold those beliefs. You know, just because you are raised a certain way to see a certain group of people as less than, or, you know, and I think we've spoken before, this even goes across other than racial realms. It goes across, you know, I'm wealthy, you're not wealthy, I'm in a different class than you are, or you're wealthy, I'm not wealthy, therefore I'm not as good as you. You know, these belief systems that we have internalized, not only do we have the opportunity to change them, if we want to make change, we have a responsibility to change the way we feel and keep that which we really do, that really does align with us, and that stuff that doesn't, get rid of it, so you have room to add what you do believe.
Yeah, that I think has also to do with the personal path to authenticity. You know, I also got, I learned certain patterns from my parents, and there are some patterns I embrace because they belong to who I am inside. And there are other patterns that I have to break because they do not belong to who I am. And that way I become more and more who I am as a unique person. And that counts for everybody. But that starts with opening the eyes and getting alive. I think people who are blindly only follow these patterns, these belief systems, they never come alive. That's why I sometimes say there are more dead people walking in the streets than they are buried on a cemetery. If you don't open your eyes, maybe that was the story of Lazarus in the Bible. It's symbolic, you know. Lazarus, he was dead and he had to wake up again. That's the spiritual waking up. Open your eyes to yourself.
And see, these people that are incarcerated have got to have this opportunity to learn that they can do that, because they all too often can accept themselves as less than they are because they don't understand that they don't have to believe it.
And I think it's even more, because I think, but it's my personal belief, all these people who are behind walls are human beings. I think for myself that we also carry, I call it a divine spark. I don't know how to call it, but that's how the way I feel it. There is this energy we carry, they carry that too, and we are not allowed to lock that up, because it's, life is sacred for me, so there is sacred life wasted behind walls. So we are not allowed to do that. It's all for me. That's how it, for me. That feels religious for me. You know, I'm not part of a religious system, but I do believe in that. So, what I find very difficult is people locking up these human beings with the Bible in their hand. That's what makes me so sad.
Exactly.
That's not the message.
Look what they did with Jesus, you know, like you said before. I mean, this is a person, a being that was on this earth trying to teach and healing people, healing the deaf, the blind, you know, restoring life to the those who have died, forgiving a prostitute, doing all these things, and yet they were ready to. They wanted him dead. This is a person that committed no sin, and they wanted him dead. So you can imagine for those who have committed a sin, that how much worse it would be.
But I think that the historical Jesus, who was really walking on this earth, he also appealed to the people to go through that process that leads to authenticity. That's why he spoke in parables. He was not really teaching us rules or something, but he was also speaking in myth and parables in order for us, that's the mystical Jesus, in order for us to find our own wisdom in it. And people who do that, and that's also what Martin Luther King did, and what's also what Gandhi did, those people are in danger. I think when Jesus would come back, that's what people believe, when he would come back, nobody would recognize him. I've read a book about that. Nobody would recognize him.
No.
Because it starts in yourself. It starts in yourself, taking responsibility, you know, looking in your own mirror, taking responsibility for yourself. And that's, you know, we spoke about it. Taking responsibility is far away from what's happening at this moment. We all choose sides.
I just wanted to say one thing, and then I'm going to let you girls take over from here because we have about 5.5 minutes. But one of the things I wanted to say is when I come across something I'm not sure of, like religion, I was born and raised a Catholic. When I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I said I wasn't learning anything because we weren't allowed to open the Bible. We'd listen to a couple of scriptures from the priest. But from that point on, I ended up going into Pentecostal, then Baptist, then Methodist, then Presbyterian, Seventh-day Adventist. I've been in a mosque. I've even gone into a Jewish chapel. I've been in all these different religions, and even Jehovah's Witnesses. But one of the things I have to say is we cannot knock something until we try it. We don't. And what I learned from all of these is even though the Muslims and the Jews believe in the first five books only of the Bible, those first five books are the main books of the entire Bible. The only thing is it stopped at those five books where other religions went further into it, which is good because we learned much, much more. But that Bible we hold in our hand is just a small little instruction book. It, like it says in the Bible, if they put everything that Jesus did while on this earth in a book, the world could not contain it. So we're looking at all these things that are happening, all these fightings over religions is ridiculous because it's not about the book itself. It's about the message that the book is giving. And whether it be in those first five books or the entire Bible, the message is the same. The message is the same. Okay, in the Old Testament, which was meant for the Jews, I guess, and it says an eye for an eye. But yet, as time went on, again, I bring up Moses because Moses killed an Egyptian. King David killed Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, killed. So there's some meaning to all of this. There's some meaning to it. And that's
yeah.
all I'm saying. We have to explore, go out and explore. I hear people
yeah.
talk about different religions, but they don't actually explore.
But I think also that if you look at the five world religions, when you look beneath the belief systems, then there's only one universal process, and that's a process of awareness, self-awareness, which you extend to awareness to the people. Because if you look at the Bible, there are four Gospels in the Bible, but there are many more Gospels. Mary of Magdala wrote her own Gospel. Judas wrote his own Gospel. There is much more. But those Gospels are not taken into the Bible because they refer to go inside yourself. So the Bible is not complete. And I think the Bible can be very valuable, but it's the perspective of people on the Bible that leads to war. It's
exactly.
not the Bible itself, but it's the perspective of it. And
absolutely. And I have to say that, you know, there with all the organized different religions that we have in the world, you know, who's to say who's right or who's wrong? But I tell you, I grew up in a congregation or in a church that believed they were the only ones going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So I was
I think,
never allowed to visit another church. And you know, every different organized religion, every individual that reads the Bible has his own perspective on what those passages mean.
Mm-hmm. And that's what causes more wars. We want to ask, you want to state your name, please? Someone that just came on.
Yeah, name's Maya.
Okay, Maya, we have about a minute and a half, so did you have something?
I know. I'm so sorry. I just came in on this conversation. Will you be continuing it?
Every Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, 9 to 10:30,
okay.
An hour and a half. Mary and
because
Jacob,
this is very important. This is awesome.
Okay.
Hmm.
We
That's nice
have you
to have you joining us, Maya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Please come back next week. Did you have
Let
something
me say
to...
real briefly that I think that what you guys are talking about is relevant because it what you're really discussing is an extension of what America is going through today, which is identity politics. Okay,
yeah.
Everyone is trying to define themselves according to groups, which I really don't agree with. I believe personally that when you start defining yourself as according to a group, there is no individuality about you. You wind up thinking like everyone else.
It's a contradiction.
Okay.
Yeah,
did you hear that, Miriam?
Believe me, I know that it's not a popular thought, but I've only been black for like 64 years. I'd like to think I've learned something.
Okay.
You're speaking to the choir.
I'm looking forward to talking to you guys next week. This was great.
Every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
That's great.
Mary and Sandy,
you
want to give your contact information?
Yes, sandyfree63@gmail.com. My business is Victory from Chaos. I'm a certified professional life coach, and I have an accreditation and cognitive behavioral therapy. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
Okay, Mariam?
Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands. www.deeperjustice.com is my organization. I'm a psychosocial therapist, and I am BA philosopher and writing my book about mass incarceration in depth, deconstruction of mass incarceration. I also you can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Mary and Sandy, thank you so much for being on with us. Myra, we look forward to having you join us next Wednesday. And we are going to be signing off now. Thank you, everyone. And we're looking forward to next Wednesday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.